Today on The Marketing Companion, I share my content anxiety, and I can't think of a better person to do that with than the amazing Jay Akunzo. Let's get on with the show. Greetings, one and all. Welcome to another Adventure in Marketing with Mark Schaefer and Jay Akunzo. Hey, Jay, how you doing?
Hey, Mark. Good to see you. Good to hear you.
Yeah. So we're going to talk today about a subject that has sort of tormented me and fascinated me at the same time. And I will start by talking about just a little story. When I was starting out in the marketing world and the content creation world, one of the people I followed was Chris Brogan. Still follow Chris. Chris, I mean, in the early days of blogging, Chris was the king. He really was. And he doesn't get enough credit for many of his pioneering efforts. Chris was always pushing the edges. He was always trying new things. And many of the things that we take for granted today really were pioneered by Chris. And one of the things that he did that I just could not understand is he would stop and start things. He would like create a blog or create a podcast. And he would build this great audience and he would create something that everyone would love. And then he would stop it. He would just stop it and start something else. And so I thought this was an interesting idea, just talking about when do you start content? When do you stop content? Because I've had the same blog. I mean, it's the topics obviously have evolved and I've evolved. But this week actually is the 15th anniversary of my blog. This very week. 15 years, I wrote my very first blog post. It sucked and had no idea what I was doing. So that's really when I started studying Brogan because he was the king at that time. I have lost count. I think it's the 12th year of the podcast, coming up on the 13th year of the podcast. And I've had, and again, it's evolved. You know, I started off with a co-host. Now I have a rotating group of co-hosts, but it's still me. And I've been afraid to stop because it's like I've built this momentum and I've built this audience. So Jay and I had a couple exchanges about this because I saw that Jay just stopped something. He's ready to start something. And I'm thinking, well, wait, what about us? What about the people who love what you're doing here? And isn't that, you know, like, haven't you built momentum? And why are you giving that up? So it's just like, this is something that I've been interested in for a long time. So I'll stop yapping and just, Jay, tell us your story.
I want to take this in two parts. I love this topic so much. The first part is just to paint a very brief picture. Keep me accountable to that. Brevity and I aren't friends. Of what went on behind the scenes that made you go, we should talk about this, Jay. Because I think people might need a shape of the, you would argue freneticism. I would argue consistency, but I'll get to that.
Yeah. And I know I have a different impression, I think, of like your career because like, I see you starting and stopping different things. And sometimes it's not always for you. It might be for a client or something like this, sure. but it's kind of like, oh, you know, gosh, Jay, you know, I was just getting into this thing and then you stopped and you switched gears and you moved it to something else. Yeah. And there's probably, you know, a method to it.
Yep.
And so part of me is like, am I missing something?
No.
Am I being like afraid? You know, am I getting too comfortable? So, I mean, I want you to challenge me on this because I've been doing the same thing for 15 years.
So I'll take this in two parts. I said before, here's like a brief shape, and then the second is let's analyze like what actually is like. Let's put an X-ray lens over it, right? Like what's the strategy behind it? So the brief shape is, I've always been a side project tinkerer, side blogs about sports, little weird creative launches. I once created the marketing vent line where people could call and vent, leave an anonymous voice message complaining about your marketing job or peer.
Oh man, we can
And two people
restart
called in.
that.
Right. So I've always done the side project thing just because it scratched an itch, but also taught me stuff. So I've had the appetite to do lots of projects. And then slowly, the day jobs gave way to independent work where the projects themselves became the business, or at least some of them did. And then it was like, huh, okay, I need to get this under control because I can't just launch a million new things all the time. Right. And so the way I do it today is I have a blog. I've had an online writing practice since 2005. The same blog since 2013, I want to say.
Oh, great.
So that's been persistent. And then the newsletter that takes the blog content and sends it to a list and does other bonus things, that the name of it has changed. But I've always done either a weekly or every other week newsletter to as a companion to the blog. So that's been persistent. Since 2016, I've had a podcast called Unthinkable, which I just announced is going away in favor of my new show, How Stories Happen, which we just launched the trailer. But every episode, an expert, an entrepreneur, a marketer dissects a single story with us. So it's almost like Song Exploder meets business storytellers, How Stories Happen. And the reason I did that was twofold. One, I think about the comedians who move on to the next act. I think about the musicians who move on to the next album. I think about the actors who move on to the next show or film. And no one goes, "We don't like you anymore." So it's like, all right, there's something more inside of us that we want to get to, and we're gonna die someday, right? So part of it was that I just have more music in me, and I want to play it differently and play it over here. So it, like, I will say this, Mark, profoundly selfish and inside out choice to sunset Unthinkable and move to How Stories Happen. And then I gut check, is this gonna be terrible for my business? Or how do I make it better for my
That's
business if
the
it can't
big
be?
question. That
Yep.
is really the big
Right.
question.
And here's why I think it's better for the business. Not only has my business changed, where I'm no longer a sort of road warrior speaker getting paid on stages, I do some of that. I'm no longer looking to go book to book, speech to speech. I'm a consultant to entrepreneurs and experts. I help them develop their IP, develop their stories, all of these things that sort of don't have a place with Unthinkable. But more so, I was kind of dragging dead weight where the show was lilting along and there was some audience that liked it, but not a lot of audience. And the name didn't make sense. And all these things, all these problems started to pop up where I just faced them after they were like festering inside of me for years and years. I finally recognized and embraced them. So there is a better version of the show or a show to support my current business. But even more than that, the thing that causes me no fear at all is what is going to be consistent and identifiable and known. To use a Mark Schaefer favorite word, is not the project for me, but my premise, which is the coherent circle around everything that I do, right? Like, I want to help you make what matters. To do that, I want you to prioritize resonance over reach. That's what I'm known for. How do I do that? Well, that changes subtly here and there, but primarily, I help you develop your premise and your stories, right? That supersedes that IP and all the stories and frameworks I use to defend it, supersedes any project. And then I have to find product market fit with my projects. And what I learned from startups is when you don't have product market fit, you need to take several different radical bets to market and then double down on the ones that hit, both for you, because you could see yourself running it for years and years, but also for the audience. And so that's how I operate.
Yeah, so as you're speaking, I'm trying to use your ideas as a template for my own work. And I think the difference is that I've evolved within the same framework. So, the first 6 years of the podcast were me and Tom Webster. Then we ran into a problem where, I mean, and I should
Too much handsome, too much handsome on the show. Was that the problem?
too
Too much
much
handsome,
handsome, too
too much
much. Yeah,
moxie.
exactly right. We were the most handsome podcast on earth. So, take that
Downgrade. Bring
for
in
what it's
Jay.
worth.
Bring in Jay Akunzo. Downgrade.
That was sort of our theme. Yeah. If you want handsome, we are the podcast for you. So I need to go back a step. So, I mean, my lane has always been the intersection of marketing, technology, and humanity. And that is just endlessly fascinating to me. And there's never been a more fascinating time now that we're getting into the AI era. So that's sort of been my overarching theme. And so I did the first 6 years with Tom, and then we ran into a problem that Tom got a new job and he wasn't really doing marketing anymore. And he said, I'm having a hard time keeping up. So then I was faced with a decision because our chemistry really was the show. I mean, the chemistry was the show. And this would have been a natural breaking point to stop and start something new, because whatever was going to come after that would have been profoundly new, because it was basically Tom and I were just goofballs on this show. But he also has this high level of intellect that he challenged me. I mean, we disagreed a lot, and that kind of made it fun. And I made a decision that, look, it was too valuable of an asset that I had worked for 6 years. We had thousands and thousands of subscribers. And instead of looking at it like you did, in terms of my premise has changed, I thought, you know what? People would kill to have this asset. How can I let it go? So let's try, let's evolve. So then I had Brooke Seles as my co-host. And that was a radical change, because she came from a very different perspective. But the thing we had in common, and this was the most important thing, is we had chemistry. Brooke and I had been friends for a long time. We collaborated for a long time. And, I looked at a number of different people that could have come in, but the thing that I just, and they would have, maybe had a broader perspective and they had more experience and they were more known. But the thing that just really led me to Brooke is that we were friends and we had lots of fun together. But so that was evolution two. Evolution two started to wind down because what I found was I wanted to explore more ideas and I wanted to have paint on a bigger canvas. And so my next evolution, which is the current evolution of the show, is six rotating co-hosts. And you are one of them, obviously. So, I mean, with you, I get to talk about content, and Paul, I get to talk about AI. I get to really sort of satisfy my curiosity in different lanes through this new evolution. So I have evolved and I haven't changed, but I haven't taken that big, I mean, the big bold move. Part of it was a little bit out of fear. Part of it was just thinking, I don't want to rebuild. And part of it was just, look, how many people would kill to have a podcast that's in the top 0.5% of all podcasts? I mean, why would I walk away from that?
Mark, we do different things, but I'd wager one of the several things that binds us together is, however we might define it in the words we use, I think the idea of control probably factors in to our personal definitions of success. Like, we want to control the way we spend our time. We want to control the problems we solve, the types of projects we do, who we work with, all these things. Because if we didn't, you and I would be working for a large corporation in some role or another. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just that those corporations are optimized for more certainty than they are each individual on the team getting personal control over everything they do. That's much more the
Generally.
entrepreneurial path. So control is a part of that, right? So I never, what I, as you were speaking, I was like, how am I making these decisions? And what I realized is, let's put aside the idea of a creative practice, which is just for me. That truly is my newsletter. I know it's like I'm sending it to people, but that newsletter is for me. I'm trying to work out ideas and write and feel fulfilled and all those things. Like, if everything blows up in my face, that will persist. So the practice aside, when it comes to like projects that are fueling my business, my marketing, and of course I want to feel fulfilled within that, I think what I'm always trying to do is make sure that any obligation I feel to do the thing is present on the micro level, not the macro level. So here's what I mean.
Yeah, tell me more about
I
that.
believe that we should make an obligation to ourselves and our audience to say, you can expect an episode of How Stories Happen every other Monday morning, right? Because it keeps you accountable. The audience has appointment listening, or at least knows when to expect it.
100%.
Totally, right?
100%.
Yes. Yeah.
Consistency. You got to show up.
Right. That's a micro level obligation. And a lot of people say to me, like, I can't publish. I'm not feeling it. I'm not inspired. I'm like, if you had a train ticket every Monday morning, you would be on it no matter how your Sunday night was going.
Right.
Right. So, like, why is it any different with creative work? Right. We start to
It
like navel
isn't.
gaze, and it's not
Yeah.
different. I agree. So that's a micro level obligation. I'm a huge believer in that. What I want to work really, really hard to avoid, however, is for the whole project itself feeling like it's an obligation where I'm like, oh,
That's for sure.
I gotta do this thing still. And
Yeah.
that's kind of how Unthinkable felt after a while to me. And so I've worked really hard behind the scenes with this new show to be like, I think I want to do how stories happen. But instead of like launching a bunch of stuff and then being like, crap, I shouldn't have done this, how do I get smart about it and make sure the project itself is not an obligation? And so I took it in three stages. So the first is I got to just pilot whether or not I have a desire to do this. So I did six episodes with six pals who I think are great business storytellers inside of Unthinkable. I was just like, let me pilot not the whole thing, just one piece of the thing I have to figure out, which is, do I want to do this? So I did six episodes, a rough approximation of the format. You know, it was messier than the actual show will be. And I told the listener, this is what's going on. It's a new thing. We're doing this for X episodes. This matters to me. And I did it well, but it was for me. And I did it and I was like, this is arresting. Like, I am cozy in this type of episode. I love this. The audience was super excited. I got a bunch of people coming back with passion in a way that I hadn't in a while. I'm like, all right, I have signal and there's signal from the market. And then the second thing I have to pilot is the actual premise of the show. Like, does anyone want to wade this far into one author's or one speaker's or one executive's single story? So I started doing like non-show content, you know, free, frictionless social media posts, conversations with people, all of it. And I'm like, all right, like, I'm getting more signal, not just from existing listeners, that they like this. I think I wrote about it in my newsletter, like how I make stories, all these things. So I validated both, I want to do it, the desire. And like, I want to be personally involved in the project. I also validated through other content that the premise itself was worthy of supporting a whole show. And then the pilot episode of How Stories Happen, which most people just call the pilot, to me was me piloting neither my desire nor the premise, but the format. It's like, how do I bring this to life? How do I make it good and repeatable and arresting for the listener? And so, like, that's, I think, a mistake people make is they're trying to pilot all three of those things, their desire as talent, the premise of the whole thing, and the format of the thing in one go. And I took it in three waves because I don't want the project itself to be an obligation, but I'm a believer in micro level obligations.
Well, as you're speaking, I'm starting to feel a little better about myself. No,
I don't want you to feel bad about yourself, though.
I've got to remember to talk about our sponsor here, because this is a real threat. I'm getting so into the conversation, and we're brought to you, of course, by Brevo, which is just an awesome company. They give you the tools to attract, engage, and nurture customer relationships, including customer experience, email marketing workflow. They are so good at that. Building landing pages that guide your customer to your main message. And you've heard it from me before. It's so easy to use. It's almost fun. Just try it for free. You can go to www.brevo.com/marketingcompanion. And if you sign up for the paid service, use the promo code companion to get 50% off your first 3 months. Well, the reason I'm feeling a little bit better about myself is because I've sort of had this pledge to myself that if it ever got to a day where I wasn't having fun, then that would be the day I stop. And that sort of seems to be sort of your guiding rule here too, that it's not just about your business, but if you're not showing up in a way where you're excited and having fun and being curious, then that's going to show up to the audience.
Yes.
And I can say that, like, look, this is the 15th anniversary, might even be today, actually, the 15th anniversary of my blog. Every week, I just can't wait to get my ideas out into the world. Every week I'm writing and I'm thinking, oh, I can't wait till they see this. This is a good one. And I've got a lot of inspiration just from working with such a variety of different people. From the Rise community, there's so many smart people asking interesting questions that changes the way I think and helps me to challenge what's going on in the world. And it's the same with the podcast. I mean, most podcasts are every week. I do this every other week, and the reason is because if I did it every week, it would be work. But it's every other week, and it's like, okay, I get to see Jay. It's an excuse to see you every, 12 weeks, basically. And that's huge for me. That's fun for me. And it's kept it fresh. I did this year rotate one host in and one ho host out. I'll probably do that just to kind of keep me, on my toes and juiced about new ideas. But so I think maybe it's crazy, but I established a framework that's worked for 15 years, and I still feel enthused about it. I'm excited about it, and I think that passion and the effort I put into both the blog and the podcast, I think it still shows. I'm not I never ever have mailed it in.
I'd also argue that although it can look like some people, I put myself in this camp, launch a lot of stuff. I feel like I am doing the same thing all the time. Like I'm speaking about the same ideas, just in maybe different like avenues, different mediums, or with different collaborative partners, or for different subsections of my audience, or even like, hey, I'm kind of weak in terms of like the stories I've collected to support this idea that people hire me for. So let me just launch this thing and I'll collect a bunch of stories, right? But within all that sort of stuff, most of it is intended to start and stop. And I try to get better at messaging that. But then there's always these like grooves that persist. And for me, it's always a something where I write and something where I talk, right? So like it's got to be for me, a newsletter. It's got to be a podcast. And those are like the skids, right? Those two things are the tracks I'm always going down. And then I'm hitting all these checkpoints down those tracks. Like a good example was last night. For people watching, if I look like death warmed over, it's because I got home late for me with two young kids. I don't sleep anyway, but late for me now is like 11:30. So I got home because I was at an old abandoned diner about a hour drive north of Boston that a friend of mine had found. He runs a video company called Pennant Video, and he wanted to do a shoot with me. And so we were doing what's called an anthem. It's like a trailer, but instead of the trailer being for a project, it's a trailer for an idea, like my beliefs in storytelling and what I want to change about how we learn it and why it
I
matters,
love
all these
that.
things. It's an
I love
anthem
that.
for the idea. Yeah, it's a big part of his business
When's
is
it
that
going to be
tenant.
done?
So that was day one of the shoot. We're going to do a couple runaround days
All
around
right. Well,
Boston.
if it's done before we publish, I'll put a
Probably
link in the
won't
show notes.
be. Yeah, I appreciate that. But I'll make it known if anyone follows me anywhere, because I'm really proud of this, right? Anyway, so like, why the heck am I doing that? Well, that like sits in this, section of my work where I'm like, okay, it's a new thing, it starts and stops, but it supports the IP and the big idea that I want to be known for, and that I use to attract and win business, whether that business is clients or members or sponsors of my platform. Right. So like that's a new thing, but it's like much more clear to me at this stage of my career how it snaps easily into place with the overall idea and platform I have.
You're tapping into another source of Mark Schaefer guilt here.
Oh yeah.
And that it is this. It is this. So, there's so many different things you can do, right? There's so many things you could do. And so I gave a talk in I was in Romania. So they were interviewing me on TV because it must have been a very slow news day in Romania or something. I'm sitting there talking to as the producer of the show. We're talking about all this thing. And I said, well, I've got this podcast. And she was like, look it up. She said, well, how come you don't make your podcast on video? I said, and she basically shamed me because I'm doing the video anyway. We're recording this on Zoom, right? So she shamed me. She shamed me. And she made me vow that I would put this podcast on YouTube, which makes all the sense in the world because YouTube is a great discovery channel for podcasts, and I haven't done it, and I don't know if I will. And here's why. Because it's another thing. It's just another thing. And everything means another task, even if I outsource it. And then there's engagement. And then there's, you know, oh, well, see, if it's on the podcast, if I screw up or something, I send it to my, you know, my producer, and I just say, well, take it out. But what if I screw up on video? That's a different editor. And that means I've got to wear clothes and stuff if I'm doing video, right? I can't show up naked like I usually do in the podcast. So that's a joke.
I want to, okay, you're talking about, it is so easy and common for, so.
So you just go down that pipeline and it's just being, like, it starts to eat you alive.
Here's something I've heard before. You need to clean up your Instagram grid. You need a clean grid. When I go to your profile, it should all look like a pattern or one big image or all that stuff. Here's something else I heard. Like, there's a client of mine who works. There's a client of mine who works 9 months out of the year. She makes $500K as an individual consultant to other business owners. She takes summers off and she parades around Colorado's mountains with her dog. She lives the life, and it's what she wants. Her website is in shambles, and she knows it, and it doesn't matter for her business. I start telling her story and people go, Jay, you know, her metadata doesn't reflect her. It's another Instagram grid type comment. These are best practice shamers. And what they are latching onto is not building a successful business, not building a business your way, but I know how to check the box. I know this is what's quote unquote the best practice. And sometimes it doesn't, can I swear on this podcast? It doesn't matter. Friggin' matter. It doesn't matter. Mark, it doesn't matter if you are on YouTube. It doesn't matter if my Instagram grid is nice and beautiful and clean. It doesn't matter if my client has like the perfectly optimized website. Mm-hmm. Because first of all, you don't have the context that Mark has or I have or my client has about the actual business, the actual fulfillment, the experiencing, all that stuff. And second of all, these are very easy rules to be like, I now have certainty about how to do my job. When actually that's just a tool that you could use or might not use. I'm pretty sure my brother-in-law, who's a carpenter, isn't being shamed by all of his peers by not using one simple thing. If they look at like a tool or something, if they look at what he's built and then they gawk at it. Like that's what people do for you, Mark. They're like, you've built something special. My client, all the entrepreneurs who are fellow coaches of her in her space, look at her as like the Buddha, as the top of the heap, right? Mm-hmm. And so along comes a marketer and goes, well, your metadata, it doesn't matter.
It's an interesting thing because, you know, sometimes, my thinking on this is like, I put so much effort into the blog and the podcast that I don't want to do anything that would take up time that would jeopardize that focus and jeopardize
Seth Godin's show notes are one sentence long. His episode show notes are one. You know how many podcast growth gurus would look at that, not knowing it's Seth Godin, and give you paragraphs upon paragraphs of advice?
It doesn't matter. Absolutely. So, part of me is like, I'm confident in my path, but I'm also thinking, geez, am I being like a coward by like not, you know, spreading into other things? But I mean, I really think my blog is better than ever. I think the podcast is better than ever. And as long as I deliver the goods, got to think that, you know, that's what matters in the long run.
You know what your superpower is, Mark? You talk about bringing the thunder.
No, please tell me. Please tell me because I've been searching.
You've talked about this before. I remember fondly a gig we did in Boston where we were watching Magic Johnson speak, and we were like, this dude, he's charming the pants off everyone here. He's so charming. He's so like giant, obviously. But you know, there's nothing that people are going to take back to their work, right?
Right.
And what you're able to do is make them think, make them care, entertain them, and transform their business, right? And so you call that, I've heard you use the phrase like bring in the thunder. Yeah. Don't publish wholesale YouTube videos. Do little like Bring the Thunder series videos where like only you, like you can show up and riff. You don't need the animated captions and the B-roll and the graphical framing and all these things that people who are weak on camera have to lean on, because the substance of the video is nada. So they're all style. They're all hype. Like,
Yeah.
what can you do? You've earned both insight and the skill set, and now this is just a Mark Schaefer hype up show to sit in front of the camera and bring the thunder. So do that for your video strategy, man.
Well, thanks for bringing up that session I did where I Magic Johnson was the opening keynote and I was the afternoon keynote, and then I did a book signing, and so many people came up to me and they said, "Ah, you were better than Magic Johnson." So that's a
Yes.
day I will never forget. But I want to, we got to wrap up here, and I just want to wrap up with just something I saw last night. I've watched, there's this absolutely captivating two-part documentary about Steve Martin. I think it might be on Netflix. Highly, highly recommended. Recommend it. Number one, it's absolutely hilarious. And number two, it's just, there are so many lessons in there about content, differentiation, being bold, being consistent, taking risks. But the thing that relates this to our discussion, Jay, is he was the biggest stand-up comedian in the history of the world. He was selling out arenas, two shows a day. It was a mania. And I remember those days because those were like my like college days, let's say. And I mean, he was a cultural icon beyond a comedian. And he made a decision to absolutely 100% stop and go 100% into movies. He was the biggest stand-up comedian in the world, filling arenas, and he never performed again. And it really made me think about the, and he basically said it was over. He said it was over. He kind of saw sort of a downward slope and some signs that, he was kind of losing his edge a little bit, and he went 100% into movies. And it stunned the world. So the first part is about like this comedic genius and his rise. The second part is the stop. And what it did to his mental health and so forth. So I highly recommend it. Lots of lessons in there for continuity, creativity, knowing when to stop. I thought I would just bring that up as something I would recommend. So Jay, thank you so much. Oh, Jay put in the notes here. Apple TV. It's on Apple TV Plus, he said. Yeah, I can't. Yeah. Look, I don't even know how to work the remote. Rebecca does all that for me. So, thanks for the guidance there, Jay.
And to
She.
listeners who are concerned, I am going to talk to Mark after the call. Just make sure he's okay.
No, I'm good. Look, I look. I'm being vulnerable with my angst, my
Oh,
content.
that's why you showed up naked. Okay, all
Content.
right.
Shh, 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 shh. That's our secret. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, everyone. I was talking to somebody today. She said, "It's amazing to me." She said, "You answer everyone's comments I see on LinkedIn." She said, "Like, who does that for you?" I said, "No, I do that because I've never ever lost the awe and wonder of appreciation of people spending time with my content and offering comments." And I never ever take for granted you spending time with me in this show. It means so much to me. So thanks for being here, and we will see you next time on The Marketing Companion.